Doesn't matter. He's just going to rail.
If you're in opposition, okay. Right, Representative, you can leave now.
All right, everyone. Friday afternoon, I'm going to call the meeting of the House Committee on Rules to order for Friday, February 5th. Happy Friday, everyone. I'm going to go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 4109.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4109 requires all statewide elected officials and state agency or commission directors to identify lead staff or staff that reports directly to them by February 1st of each year. Those identified must file a statement of economic interest with the Oregon Government Ethics Commission. It comes to you, Madam Chair. No revenue. We do not have a fiscal impact statement yet.
Excellent. Leader McLean.
Thank you. My name is Mike McLean. I represent House District 55. I'm here to testify on behalf of House Bill 4109 today. I have with me John Davis, State Representative from District 27.
Didn't identify himself.
26.
Somewhere in Oregon.
Excuse me, Margaret, I think it's 27.
Madam Chair, can we confirm that he's the state representative?
Well, I will make sure that Representative Davis identifies himself for the record when he starts talking.
I wanted to talk about transparency in agencies. And the reason why I used a priority bill for this, and John Davis and others support it. And we wanted to share with you why we would like a floor vote. If you would move it to the floor, is our request. Is because so much of the lives of Oregonians have been affected predominantly by agency as opposed to the legislative branch. And in fact, in the last year, we've had quite a few allegations. Allegations of everything from influence peddling with the former governor's office. Again, these are allegations. We've had distorted carbon reduction statistics that ultimately it ended what was a bipartisan highway bill, but we had agency issues there. We had, frankly, the CCOs had challenges with the OHA. Resulting in recouping millions of dollars. Of course, tax credits with our Department of Energy have been in the press and the like. So we certainly have had agencies in the news. And Oregon's disclosure requirements for public officials are important. But we need to expand them. Not just to those of us who are elected, but to those of us like agency directors who are required to file similar disclosures. But it should be all the regulators who are the decision makers. So it is my opinion that the rules that we currently have don't extend far enough. And it's up to us in the legislature to make sure that the actions of the government reflect the best interests of the public. 4109 is a simple bill. It requires agency leadership and their immediate staff to report identical economic conflict of interest statements as their directors. The bill will ensure key regulators are not being influenced by outside interests and allow us to regain the trust of the citizens of our great state. Expansion government is not served well by our antiquated public disclosure laws. Agency directors are no longer the sole regulators. Division heads and their immediate staff often play a critical role in interpreting legislation and developing rules to implement regulations that we establish. I'm going to hand off to my good friend John Davis to discuss a bit on what the breadth of this might look like, but ultimately it comes down to this. In an agency, if you are making a recommendation to the decision maker or at that senior staff level, then we should know if you have a conflict of interest or potential conflict interest in the decision of the agency. Our goal is ultimately to make sure people know that their government is going to be forthright, not just in conflict disclosures, but in making sure that our credibility over the decisions we make are not questioned. Because as we know, in Oregon, given the pervasive credibility challenge that has occurred as a result of the last couple of years, all aspects of government are viewed with a suspicious eye. And our goal is to begin to alleviate that suspicion and assure the people that there is going to be full disclosure of decision makers. I now look at John Davis.
Thank you.
Remarkable young man. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. I am State Representative John Davis from House District 26. Stop fighting 26. Thank you very much for the opportunity to share with you on this Friday afternoon about the very important role of our agencies. Yesterday, in this very room, in this very seat, I had the pleasure and honor to sit alongside our Chief Justice and talk about co-equal branches of government and the fact that one branch of government, the executive branch, and the administrative arm of that branch has grown so large, in particularly after the last 30 years. And the amount of influence that that administrative branch of government affects in our everyday lives and in governing industry and major decisions and regulatory affairs in our state is tremendous. It has really become a fourth branch of government. This bill is an opportunity to make sure that those who are in a position of regulating and making significant decisions with respect to industry and many other areas of this state are having to make the same disclosures about conflicts of interest that we do as legislators, that agency directors do as directors, so that we know who has a conflict. There are, and there could be, circumstances. I say there could be circumstances because we don't know. There could be circumstances where those in positions of decision-making or making recommendations have spouses, have financial interests in the very industries that they are regulating. And this is a very modest proposal at chipping away at that to provide an opportunity for the governor, secretary of state, state treasurer, attorney general, commissioner of BOLI, or a state officer listed in paragraph H, which is this very long list of directors, to designate those serving in division leadership positions or in a position responding directly to the director or division lead or their administrative equivalent to make the same disclosures that we all do to the Oregon Government Ethics Commission not later than February 1st each year. It's a modest proposal. I think it speaks to the need to have transparency in our agency decision-making and continue to rebuild trust in state government. Thank you very much.
Questions? Fine men.
Mm-hmm.
Got one.
Yes.
Down here.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Representative Rayfield.
Oh, yeah. That's how I get treated on this committee. Representative McLean, first off, we miss your presence on this committee. We are having to do with what, make do with what we have. We miss your intellectual prowess. With that said, the way that I was reading this, and I want to make sure that I understand it correctly, is that you'll have the director that already has to respond and fill this out. Then you have the department within the divisions within the department or agency, the directors of those positions or whoever's in the, I guess, equivalent title has to respond. And then the way I read it is everybody responding to those division leads then also have to fill out a form. So essentially you've got three tiers, if you will, of leadership that have to fill out the forms. Is that, am I
I think, Madam Chair and Representative Rayfield, that's the way I read it, because ultimately it comes down to this. If you are preparing, overseeing those who prepare, or making a recommendation for a decision. So if you're preparing for the director decision, you're overseeing folks that are preparing the decision or making the recommendation to the agency director or the division head, and saying, we recommend the agency do X, Y, and Z. Currently, they don't have any disclosure requirements. And so there have been perception that that there hasn't always been disclosure of spouses or family members who had applied for agency decisions, and even though the agency head is not connected to someone involved or has a business interest in the outcome of an agency, the person recommending it did. And I think it just looks at the reality of the life. The agency director may be the signature that's on it, and she may sign the order, but she doesn't necessarily really research and go into the details and research the files. That's relied upon by people who are growing in incredible influence in the state of Oregon. The folks who prepare these memos and say, I recommend the agency do X. And we're saying, if you're kind of at that level, we should know if you have a potential conflict of interest or reporting with a family member. Now, again, it's not necessarily that this is, mathematics. This may end up being more art because we have to deal with public perception. But I'm trying to at least get it to the level of the people who make recommendations of the decisions.
Thank you.
Thank you. I don't have any problem with the concept at all. I think it's a good idea. I do have some questions, however, on the language, and I'm looking on page 4 at the top of the page, the black letter material there. serving in a division leadership position, is there a definition of division leadership position in the bill or somewhere else? There is not. Okay, and then the other one is, this is even more problematic, I think. In a position directly responding directly to the director or division lead or their administrative equivalent, it occurs to me the very first person that I think of when I think of a position responding directly to any of those people is a secretary or an administrative assistant. I suspect that's not what you had in mind, but I don't know that.
Chair Williamson, Representative Barnhart, no, it's not. It's the folks that are really making the recommendations of the decisions that ultimately lead to the director's final decision. And I think as Representative Davis talked about, the pervasiveness of this fourth branch of government, we need to get deeper into that and really grab the people making the decision. But I acknowledge they're not making the decision until that final director signs off. And like I said, she may not have, she's maybe, or he or she may be the actual, final decision. But seldom are they the ones that are actually going into the files and prepping it and et cetera. They're relying on a level of folks for that decision. I don't mean to grab the scheduler or the office manager, that thing. And it may be that we need to tweak it.
I appreciate that, and I suspect, given your testimony, that exactly what I was going to get as an answer to the question. I think the difficulty with this bill is going to be drafting, not what we're trying to get at. It's going to be getting the thing in a form that you can hand this to division leadership person in the division leadership position, or the director, and they're going to be able to say, "Oh well, it's these people then," and sort of easy to define. I would suggest trying to figure out, you have described in your testimony a set of considerations that ought to be made. If we could figure out a way to write the thing that way rather than the way it's written here, I would feel a lot more comfortable about it. I'm concerned that this is going to get out to the people in those positions, and they're not going to have any idea which people they ought to name, and they're going to name a lot of people who we probably don't intend simply because of reading this statement literally. Simply a comment about drafting, Madam Chair.
And Madam Chair and Representative Barnhart, I can't speak for Representative Davis, but I know from my perspective, I'd rather get it right than get it fast. So
you've said so, yes.
So I think your perspective is the one I hope the committee adopts. We need to get it right, and I hope we can do it in this short session because this is exactly the type of policy stuff I believe short sessions are for. But if we can't get it right, then maybe we could spend some time until next session getting it right.
Chair Williamson, and it's very strange to just say Representative Barnhart because you're always Chair Barnhart in my mind from revenue. I appreciate that question. Also, you alluded to it towards the end of your last remarks, which is that each agency director and the statewide elected officials have the opportunity in this bill to point out those people. So it is, while certainly not discretionary that those individuals be identified by such directors, there is certainly some judgment that would take place by the directors and by our statewide office holders as to who really is in a position of leadership.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Williamson. Though I don't yet have the respect of my colleague, Representative Rayfield, to the left of me yet, I'm working on it. I would really hope that we can get the language right, and I'm hoping that this committee has the intention of moving this bill. I think it's a basic transparency issue that needs to be addressed. And it sounds good, but I know, you know, we've all got to be comfortable and make sure that we're targeting the right people.
Ron Burson. That's all I have on the witness list, so if anyone else wants to testify, let me know.
Good afternoon. My name is Ron Burson. Mm-hmm. I am the Executive Director of the Oregon Government Ethics Commission. I am 244-0401H, big U on this. And I think you folks have said what I really wanted to say was we always support people filing statements of economic interest. The Commission, as you know, has built a system that is going to be electronic now, and so adding more, there really isn't a fiscal to that. But we would like to try to work on the language, try to make it clearer. An example is I am one of those filers underneath H, and I would argue that all of my employees report to me directly because there's only 9 of us and I don't have a management to go through. So trying to get that right, I agree with the prior the representatives talking about trying to get this language right. So again, I just came up to say I had concerns about the language trying to be clearer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ron, as you were sitting back there, I could see the wheels turning. Were you kind of trying to mull over what the language might look like and make recommendations to the representative?
Chair Williamson, Representative Huffman, that's why I don't play poker, because I'm easily read.
You're telling.
But I don't think I have it all in my mind yet, as I doubt if anybody here does. But it is an interesting project to work on, and I would be happy to use my time to try to get that language right, whether that happens this session or not. So I'm available for working on that bill. Thank you.
All right, with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 4109. And we are actually going to go out of order, colleagues. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 4135 and have call up Gina. Oh, and Barry, sorry. Come on up. So my intention is to go 4135, 4134, and then 4130.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4135 directs State Chief Information Officer to develop standards, protocols, and procedures for specified executive department agencies to use in fulfilling public records requests that seek records in electronic form, directs the department to coordinate efforts of executive department agencies in fulfilling public records requests for records in electronic form that the department has custody of, and to provide any technical assistance to those agencies in fulfilling public records requests. It requires the department to coordinate requests when multiple executive department agencies receive requests for records, provides the duties of DAS become operative January 1st, 2017. There is an emergency clause on the measure, Madam Chair. This measure comes to you with no revenue impact, and a fiscal impact was issued.
Thank you. My name is Gina Zedlick. I am a senior policy advisor in the governor's office. I'm here today to talk to you about House Bill 4135. In light of past events, the governor continues to make transparency a priority. The governor recently signed an executive order requiring state agencies to comply with recommendations issued in the Secretary of State's recent audit of state agencies and their responses to public records requests. In complement to that order, this bill is an immediate legislative step to ensure that Oregonians may access public information in a timely manner. The bill creates technical public records positions within DAS to aid DAS and all executive branch agencies with large requests regarding electronic records. As Aaron highlighted in a long summary, the bill specifically addresses challenges that agencies, including the governor's office, has faced with electronic records by directing the state CIO to establish and maintain uniform and consistent process standards and protocols for searching for and producing electronic public records requests, directing DAS to provide central processing of public records requests on behalf of agencies for which the department is the custodian of electronic records, and to coordinate fulfilling electronic records requests affecting multiple agencies in the executive branch. Finally, the bill directs DAS to provide technical assistance to executive branch agencies in searching for and producing electronic records requests that are responsive. And I will offer an example that is real and that I've spoken to some of you about already, but in terms of bringing this to why this is important in a way that maybe we're all familiar with is, you can get large electronic records requests. A lot of agencies are getting them. We recently, you know, got any and all emails related to, former Governor Kitzhaber and Sylvia Hayes. Now, you would think that that is a pretty easy thing to type in, and I'm not a technician, but I understand this example, which is you can type in Kitzhaber and Sylvia and get one body of electronic records. Another agency to whom the request might have also gone may write Sylvia and Kitzhaber in a reverse order. And lo and behold, that might bring up a different body of electronic records. So this position would address really, really technical issues like that, like what does consistency in searching look like across state agencies. It will help DAS do that within their agency. As you know, a lot of executive branch agencies have different electronic systems that they use, different email systems. So this person would be able to also coordinate with them and make sure that no matter what system is being used, that we can guarantee that we're starting with at least the body of records that is being asked for. So I think of it as a quality control, and there is an emergency clause on this so that we can hire these positions within DAS as soon as possible.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jean, I was glad to see that you were the one coming to testify because you'll know kind of the inside story of some of the stuff I'm going to ask. The request for people, do you think that would be impacted in any way if our Attorney General work group is able to, and I said if, able to reduce the number of exemptions, which we're looking at, the 540 or whatever it is, exemptions, if we are able to narrow that down, do you think that would lessen the need for people, or do you think it's there? And then the need will always be there. In conjunction with that, how does the ombudsman position fit in with these?
Representative Huffman, members of the committee, thank you for the questions. To your first question, I think this is a purely technical position. So this is not a lawyer. They're not helping with exemptions. So I'm thinking that, well, this is just what Gina thinks, but sitting on that committee, that is really valuable work and that will affect all agencies if those laws change and the applicability. I don't think in the near future that any of our giant public records requests are going to go away. So I think these positions will prove probably of evolving value over time in informing exactly how the technology is working and what kind of records we have and how we store them, so that they can offer up to the lawyers or to the agencies who will be then making the judgment decisions that maybe a change in the exemption laws would affect. So does that answer your first question?
And probably fine on part one. And then in relationship to the ombudsman, are they totally disconnected or how would they work together?
So the governor is very interested. She sees a public records ombudsman, I think, as a long-term solution that she is really interested in looking into what that would look like for Oregon. In the near future, I think this is just a very immediate practical step to help with the requests we're getting today.
Okay, so. Great. I just wanted to separate that in my head.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm looking at Section 2. And I'm trying to parse who it is that we're talking about here. The Department of Administrative Services shall coordinate the efforts of each executive department agency for which the department is the custodian of the public records of the agency. Who are we talking about? The word department is used three times in that sentence, and it isn't clear to me what it means in each instance.
Representative Barnhart, members of the committee, I'm going to turn it over to Barry Pack to answer.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Barry Pack, Chief Administrative Officer with the Department of Administrative Services. And I was just here today to answer these sorts of questions. I don't have any other particular points to add than Gina already covered. I think we worked closely with the governor's office in drafting this language, and I'll explain to you the intent of that first paragraph. That is
And
to
I'm
cover,
looking actually at subsection 2 of section 2. That was what I was quoting from.
Ah, yes. Okay, thank you. Let me just make sure I yes.
I mean, it appears to me as though the word department is used in three different ways in that sentence, and that is confusing.
Yeah, so the intent of this bill is that DAS, as an enterprise service provider, is the custodian of records. We have in our possession records that are owned by other agencies.
Okay.
And so when a request comes in to another department for which we store their emails, for instance, the bill directs us to coordinate and provide the production of those records to the other agency.
I get you. So the third instance of, if I could, Madam Chair, the third instance of the word department is actually a reference back to the Oregon Department of Administrative Services.
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, that's correct.
Thank you. There was a factual piece I didn't get, I didn't understand, which is you actually have their records to start with.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, in not all cases, but in some cases.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. That answers my question.
Any other questions? Right, with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3135. And if you could stay, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 4135.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 4135 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Gilliam has moved House Bill 4135 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Is there a referral to Ways and Means or anything because of a fiscal for two people, or that'll be absorbed in the governor's budget? Okay.
I saw the dash one amendment. Was that?
Oh.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we did have a dash one amendment. It's my understanding that it's not something we need to adopt today. If Gina wanted to.
Chair Williams and members of the committee, that we had, in speaking with legislative council, we've determined that the original bill does what we need it to do. So we don't need the amendment. Thanks.
And we're, if I may, we're then not going to consider the dash two either?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the dash two amendment came from Representative Nierman.
Hasn't been considered.
No, and we do not have the appropriate paperwork on the dash two either.
Thank you. That answers my question.
Any other discussion? Any objections? Motion passes. We need a carrier. Anyone like to carry?
I'll carry.
Okay. I will close the work session on 4135 and open a public hearing on 4134.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4134 requires expedited reporting to Oregon Government Ethics Commission when lobbyists change representation of clients during regular or special sessions of Legislative Assembly. Beginning 5 days before start of and throughout regular a special session, lobbyists must report to the Government Ethics Commission within 5 business days. When they start or cease representation of a client, requires the Commission to make lobbyist registration and lobbyist registration updates publicly available on the Internet within 2 business days of receiving information. There is an emergency clause on this measure. The measure comes to you, Madam Chair, with no revenue and no fiscal impact.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Gina Zedlick, Senior Policy Advisor for Governor Kate Brown. I'm here today to talk about House Bill 4134, Public access to information regarding the affairs and activities of government entities and public officials is the hallmark of excellence in state government. Lobbying, a citizen's ability to engage with decision makers in affecting public policy decisions, has become an accepted aspect of policy making. Now more than ever, however, the public wants and deserves the utmost transparency in these interactions. Currently, lobbyists must report any change in clientele to the Oregon Government Ethics Commission within 10 days. However, during a legislative session in particular, a lobbyist's clients may change quickly. Moreover, the public should have an easy and up-to-date way to access this information. House Bill 4134 shines a spotlight on lobbying activity in Oregon. The bill requires quicker reporting of changes to a lobbyist's clients during legislative session and also mandates that the Oregon Government Ethics Commission make that information easily and quickly available. The bill requires reporting within 5 days when a lobbyist commences or ceases representation of a client during the session, and directs the commission to make this information accessible to the public online. I am flanked by the members of the Capitol Club, and this is a narrowly focused bill. The Ethics Commission has a new web presence as of January of this year, and that has, I think, both enabled new things to happen and may also require some adjustments in the laws that we have. So we've been working, the governor's office has been working with the Capitol Club, and we actually have an amendment that we would like to bring forward next week for your consideration that would reflect both the new changes that the new processes that are brought about by having an online system and also how to accommodate to make this 5-day reporting work. So.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Bill Cross. I am here today as the Capitol Club's Legislative Committee Chair. And it pains me, but I was involved in the original adoption of the lobby disclosure laws in 1973.
The year
I was probably in junior high and doing it as an intern for Oregon Common Cause, but... Here we are, and it's not a lot has changed with the lobby disclosure law. It's been performing fairly well, but all of a sudden, the electronic age has caught up, and we're going from paper to online registration. And so Eva, our legislative committee vice chair is going to just briefly walk you what that process means and why it could be a complication.
Thank you, co-chair and members of the committee. Eva Ripito, today I am, as my colleague said, vice chair of Capital Club Legislative Committee. Sorry, not used to saying that. So previously, before we've done the electronic filing, the form was just one form where you would put the lobbyist names and then your employer or client would sign the bottom of it, and that would, and then we would turn that into the Ethics Commission. With the electronic forms, we now have gone from a one-step process to a two-step process. So the lobbyist goes and submits files that they have this client, and then the client must accept that filing within the 5 days. Is that how I am? Yeah. So our concerns are is that it, on the client end, somebody may miss that email, they may be away, there may be some sort of glitch where it does not get done in the correct time frame. So we wanted to make sure that there was a way to catch that the intent was shown, that the lobbyist was indeed submitting their updates in a timely fashion, and that that would be recognized. So as Gina said, we're working together to figure out the right way. Thank you.
Those amendments are being worked on now, correct?
Madam Chair, the amendment would basically continue with the five-day requirement, and we totally agree that that's very doable, and the quicker that information is available, it better serves the public. We just want to make sure that if the employer didn't approve in that same five-day timeline, we as the lobbyists can say, wait a minute, we want to withdraw our registration so that we're not somehow unintentionally complicit with, you know, having failed to persuade our employer in that same timeline to have approved it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Bill, would you actually be representing that client within that five-day period before they had approved or acknowledged the agreement? You wouldn't submit that to Ethics until you had a signed agreement and you were actually representing the client, right? What am I missing?
Madam Chair, Representative Huffman, you could be working for them. We don't have to wait for a signed contract to become registered as a lobbyist for a client. We don't have to wait for a paycheck. It just depends on, you know, your situation and the employer and what kind of agreement you come to. It could be an oral agreement. We need you tomorrow because we've heard about an issue that's moving quickly. Please insert yourself and help represent our, you know, concerns. And so we may not have a written contract. It could move very quickly. And so I think, you know, working with the governor's office, they helped us kind of come up with maybe a way to just make sure that there's a fail-safe or a way to, if something in that 5 days doesn't work as it should, that we're not liable.
But Bill, yeah. What you're saying is your business practice may be different around how you contract with a client. Within the 5 days, once you're representing someone, you're representing them. So that's when this process kicks in. So it doesn't have anything necessarily to do with your business practice.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Representative Kenemer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a committee question. What are our requirements here and rules in terms of completion of amendments and passing out House bills for dates?
Madam Chair, Representative Kenemer, the Rules Committee is not subject to the deadlines that the other policy committees are, so therefore we can continue to work on and pass first chamber bills throughout session and begin to work on second chamber bills throughout that as well.
But it is.
Just wanted to clarify that. Mm-hmm.
It is my intent, Representative Kenemer, to move this bill on Monday. We think we'll have the amendment back. It's a pretty straightforward amendment. And so we're doing the public hearing today, and we'll do the work session on Monday. We have the amendment.
That sounds great. Thank you.
All right.
Please, I
you
defer.
Too. Yep, thank you. I think you can anticipate my question. I understand the complexities now a little better than I did when we talked earlier about this. Could you describe a little bit why you need 5 days instead of perhaps 24 hours, 48 hours? Why 120 hours? I would think from the public point of view, the shorter that time, the better. Obviously, we don't want it to be so short that you can't comply.
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, Eva, did you want to take that? We really haven't talked about that other than, I mean, because the original proposal was 5 days, reducing it in half from the 10 days.
Yeah.
I don't think as this system becomes, you know, part of the process that 24 hours, 48 hours, 72 hours would be a problem. In most cases for the lobbyist, it's not the problem, but it's the time frame to get the employer to accept and acknowledge through that online that, so that's the biggest issue. And we haven't, I mean, we've kind of talked a little bit about informally, but I could see if, I mean, as this process and as the Ethics Commission, you know, fine tunes the process, the online, I wouldn't be surprised if you see over a period of time, you know, things changing.
Just a quick suggestion, if I could, then. In many situations, there's a public notice of a pending action. You could post that instantly the moment you claimed a person or an organization was your employer, and it would go from pending to accepted when they accepted. That would give the public notice immediately when you put it in, and it wouldn't depend on the time that it took your employer to respond.
Madam Chair,
a possibility.
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, that's more than a possibility.
Okay.
They actually, the process is when I submit that registration for to lobby so and so, it will be pending. The Ethics Commission gets it. They do something up in the cloud. It comes down as pending. And once the employer does, on a separate form, respond back to the invitation that the Ethics Commission sends them, invitation from this lobbyist to represent you, once they confirm yes, then it becomes finalized.
Right.
It's that little pending window that we just want to make sure we don't get on the...
Right. Well, if I could, if pending is on the web page, along with the finals, I think you're covered, assuming the bill says that.
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, the bill doesn't acknowledge the pending part. Right. The pending part, though, is there, and anybody can access it, right, which is good. But, yeah, because the law was written evidently a couple years ago when I was in junior high, it doesn't acknowledge this whole new electronic. I mean, one of the other things that I think the Capitol Club would like to do with the governor's staff is, beyond this issue, you know, look at going back through the ethics, the disclosure law that we do have, because there may be other areas that we need to kind of update into the 21st century.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With respect to the other members on this panel, I wanted to say something about Mr. Cross. That is probably the best testimony I've heard in this committee over several years. Intelligent, certainly gracious to cross-examination, and I only hope that you have the kind of representation in this House that you deserve.
Care to comment?
Madam Chair, Representative Gilman. Gillian.
Or is it?
I think we do. I don't know.
Any other comments or questions? All right. Thank you very much. With that, I am going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4134. I didn't open a work session. Oh, and carry over the work session until Monday.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Oh, okay. Okay. And now I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 4130. Representative Val Hoyle, Representative John Davis.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4130 requires state agency public records policies and public record retention schedules of the state agencies, legislative assembly, and political subdivisions to retain the records for 2 years, requires public bodies to provide standardized acknowledgement of receipt of public records request within 5 business days, requires public bodies to provide records or to assert exemption from disclosure within 30 days of receipt of request. Public body may exceed 30-day deadline if public body provides estimated time that records will be disclosed or exemptions claimed, permits requester to petition for administrative or judicial review if the public body fails to meet the 30-day deadline, limits about a public body with 10 or more full-time employees may establish for fees, directs county clerks and city elections officers to give notice to the Secretary of State regarding petitions for county or local initiative measures, and requires Secretary to provide reasonable statewide notice of county or local initiatives. There is an appropriation from the general fund to the Secretary of State to implement the county or local initiative measure provisions. This measure does have an emergency clause on it and a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. You did see a -1 and a -2 amendment posted. They are from Representative Nierman. He is not able to be with us today, but will be here at a later date to discuss them. We did receive a -3 amendment from Representative Hoyle, and I believe she will talk about that amendment this afternoon.
Excellent.
Hi, Val Hoyle, State Representative, House District 14, West Eugene, and Junction City. Thank you very much for listening to our testimony here today. First, I want to talk about the process for this bill. In the last session, there were a number of people that wanted different ethics reforms and public records reform, and we had a diverse set of ideas of what could happen, and a group of us committed to making sure something happened in the short session. So there were just an informal group, 3 Democrats, 3 Republicans. We had myself, Representative Lively, Representative Rayfield, Representative Davis, Representative Gilliam, and Representative Hack. And we wanted to make sure that it was an equally bipartisan group. We wanted to make sure that we addressed as many issues as possible that we could agree on. We wanted a bill that wasn't controversial because we wanted tools that allowed people to navigate the public records request process better, as opposed to having something that could be used as a weapon. And there are lots of things we can agree on. So the other piece is that, you know, we made the commitment that we would not allow amendments to the bill that we didn't all agree on, because, again, we don't want this to be controversial. We want to actually get something out of the session that will change the process and make public information easier to access. So just a few things. There were a number of people that came to us when the original bill came out about their concerns, the cities, the counties, a metro, special districts, and the police chief, sheriffs, and we have tried to address each of their concerns, which is what you see in the amendment, in the -3 amendments. There are still a few more things that we'd like to do. One would be taking off the emergency clause. That we'll put in another amendment to have that happen, because a number of the public bodies that are affected would like to have time to be able to respond appropriately. The bill would require public bodies to provide standardized acknowledgement that they've received a public records request 5 days after receiving it. That's standard practice. We put in an amendment to acknowledge that not all public bodies are have staff there all the time, so we made an exception. For instance, a school district, you may not have people there during the summer or Christmas vacation or whatnot. It requires public bodies to provide requested records or an exemption within 30 days of receipt of the request. But public bodies can exceed the 30-day deadline, because sometimes these are very large requests that take longer than 30 days, if they provide a written estimate of the time the records will be disclosed. Now, I think for many times when the public does a public records request, they don't know what's happening, and they assume that that the work isn't being done. So this is about a standard form of communication, and the bill also permits the requesters to petition for administrative or judicial review if the public body doesn't meet the 30-day deadline, and that we felt was important. And then House Bill 4130 also limits amounts that public bodies with 10 or more full-time employees may charge as fees for responding to public records. We have heard some feedback that the fee limit may be an issue, and I think we're going to hear some testimony as to that. We are willing to work with the agency, cities, and people involved to make sure that this is not onerous.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. I'm State Representative John Davis from House District 26. The fight in 26! Just keeping us awake on a Friday. In this very room, not more than an hour ago, I had the tremendous opportunity to talk about transparency in our state agencies. And this is a wonderful opportunity to talk about transparency in our public records process, because no one likes it more when the state tells cities and counties what to do. And so this is our opportunity to do just that. I think Representative Hoyle went through the process very well of talking about the scope of the amendments, and I want to emphasize that we are seeking a step forward in the public records process. We're not seeking the end-all be-all. There's at least one, if not multiple, work groups going on right now at various levels of state government to look at a complete overhaul to our public records law. That is not what's intended here. What's intended is to give the public a clear expectation for what will happen when a public records request is made, that a response will be promptly given so long as a public body, a public agency, a city or a county is in business. If it's a school district that's out for 60 days, certainly the expectation would not be to place a burden on them, but that there's a response, that within 30 days there's another response, which currently is not in law, and that at that 30 days either the records are produced, the exception to the records production is made, or if the records request is too large, then notice is given that more time is necessary to produce the records. So keeping the public informed during this process. In discussing this with some of my cities and counties, their indication is, well, this is kind of what we do already. And so we don't see too big an issue with it. I think where you're going to see some of the friction certainly is around the cost. And that is a balance that we are attempting to strike, where the public can expect not to be overcharged by maybe a few bad actors in the state with agencies using cost as a deterrent, at the same time balancing our current statutory requirement that public records requests be paid for by those who are making the request, that the burden on the public not be borne by the public, but actually be borne by those who are making the request. The local initiative piece of this bill, and I'm looking at the dash threes, I apologize, I should have led with that, the dash threes. Another piece of this bill, which is sort of a new arena, it begins on page 9 of the dash threes, and this is the notice of local initiative. Currently, as you know, a local initiative at a county or city level has to be published in a newspaper or publication of general circulation in the county or city. Which for a small city or a small county could be a very small notice that very few people actually see. And to actually find out if there is an initiative going on in your city or in your county, it would take a physical trip to the county to ask the question. And in this digital age, providing those notices, just as we do for statewide ballot measures, on the Secretary of State's ballot measure website or initiative website seems to be good, prudent public policy to say that the public, myself in Washington County, I should be able to, as a resident of Oregon, figure out if there's a initiative going on in Coos County, or for that matter, if there's a resident of Coos County, that they can figure out easily and quickly if an initiative is taking place. And there's a budgetary ask in a blank amount on page 10 of the dash threes to cover additional costs as may be required. I think the dash threes are not there yet. We attempted to begin to address the issue of public bodies that are not open all the time. I don't think the language on page 5 gets us there. It only exempts school districts, education service districts, community colleges, et cetera. It seems to me there are vector control districts, there are small cities, there are small public actors that may be closed for weeks at a time. It's hard to put those folks under the thumb for not responding to an email or a request they didn't actually receive. So this is an incremental step. I hope we can move it forward in an amended form this session, again, to show the public that we are taking steps to make our government more transparent. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Recognizing my finger.
You knew that when I was coming.
Representatives, I can see where section six is fairly unique and probably not being addressed in other conversations that are going on. But has there been an effort to try to coordinate with the governor's office and the AG's office and others that are working on different aspects so that we do have a coordinated effort if we pass this through so that it's going to blend well with other works that are going on?
Chair Williamson, Representative Huffman, yes.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To our guest today, I really really appreciate the work you've done on Section 6. I think that is really needed. I think that's a great piece of work. I expect that there will be some talk about how much this may cost. I'll look forward to hearing that, and you know, I hope we can really stick to the facts as to what we can reasonably expect it to cost when we talk about this, because I think it's a great idea. Thank you.
Thank you. And Chair Williamson and Representative Wilson, some of the feedback that we got from the county clerks is that because the only way to find out if there's an initiative being started at a local level is to call the clerk, that clerks are spending an inordinate amount of time because people are calling every single week saying, can you update me? Mm-hmm. So this actually, from the clerk's perspective, allowing them to just send it to the Secretary of State's office for them to put it up on part of the website that already exists, it makes it more efficient, and they were actually very favorably, they received this very favorably. And I agree with you. I think it's an important thing to do.
Madam Chair, if I might just add, I was speaking to a member of the Clerks Association last night who also thought this was good stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, I was looking at, we have quite a number of letters from concerned entities, two cities that I represent, and those two at least are current as of today, although they're on the dash ones. So I guess you're aware of this correspondence and trying to work as much as you can to address their concerns.
And through the chair, thank you for that, and I think adequate time needs to be given to cities to review the amendments. The dash threes, I think, were just made public 5 minutes ago or at the beginning of the hearing. So I certainly anticipate and appreciate the concerns and opposition that I think we're going to hear in a few minutes. Want to recognize that those are valid, and it's our intention to try to work through them.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Call up Rob Bovet, Scott Winkles, and Becky Gladstone.
Good
I got the hot seat. Chair Williamson, members of the committee, for the record, Rob Ovett, legal counsel for the Association of Oregon Counties. I'm actually wearing two hats, both for AOC. I'm also representing the Oregon Association of County Clerks. So let me start there, because that's all good stuff, and I would echo what Representative Wilson said. The clerks are supportive of the local IRR provisions. Yes, there will be some additional work to scan these initiatives and referendum and send them to the Secretary of State, but there will be a single clearinghouse place where everybody can go instead of calling every clerk every month. So this is a good thing. On 4130, I first should start by thanking Representative Hoyle and Representative Davis for reaching out to us and working with us on the Dash 3 amendments. We had a number of concerns that are expressed in all the letters you see on OLIS. And I think the Dash 3s, although I shipped them out to the county attorneys about half an hour ago, I'll let you know if they see anything else. But I think we took care of most everything except for the fee issue that Representative Hoyle mentioned. And so I'll just touch briefly on that, and I think you'll hear a little bit more about that in terms of real-world examples, what we face. But let me start with just this, and I'll keep it really brief. The mass majority of public records requests that our members receive are disposed of immediately. They're simple. They want a document or two. They're typically responded to immediately. We're given, people are emailed the electronic document, and there's no charge. They're just done. The ones that we really struggle with, of course, are the large requests. Some, as alluded to, can be really overbroad and difficult to understand why they're being presented. Others are straightforward, legitimate. They might be an out-of-state research organization seeking really in-depth data going back 20 years, and they're willing to pay. It's a big job. So the current status of the law is we are limited to charging only our actual costs for processing the public records request. And excluded from that is any time that our attorneys spend learning about the public records law. So we can charge for attorney time redacting various other issues, but not learning whether an exemption applies, for example. So we're quite satisfied with the way the current law works. We think that if you change the current law and restrict our ability to collect our actual costs, you're essentially having the taxpayers subsidize private public records requests, and we think that's a place that Washington, the state of Washington, shows you probably ought not to go, where there's a number of stories in various cities, one particular where essentially the city is potentially at the risk of bankruptcy or dissolving because they've been hit with so many public records requests and they can't recover their own costs, which doesn't seem fair to the public who live in that city. But I'll stop there and mention that I've asked some law enforcement friends to come talk about some of the public records requests we get in sheriff's offices and really how we need to be recovering our costs. Thank you.
For the record, Scott Winkles representing the League of Oregon Cities, and thank you for the opportunity to testify. And I would also like to echo my colleague, Mr. Bovet's thanks of Representative Hoyle and Representative Davis for the cooperative spirit and effort you've had in working with this bill. I appreciate that very much. I think that I'm looking at the Dash 3s. I think this looks pretty good. I think we have moved transparency or in Oregon forward with the Dash 3s. I think the using the ensuring that the request is going to the statutorily required point of contact for public records requests makes things work more smoothly, directing them to using the forms. I think that helps us return requests around faster, and when we do it, we're able to do it faster. There's less cost. However, on the issue of cost, I do have some concerns with how that is currently addressed in the Dash 3s. And for cities, the public records requests that are cumbersome and hard to deal with are a little bit different than what some of the state agencies might be experiencing. So I think when most people hear public records requests, they're thinking about emails or memos or notes or things of that nature. But for a city that's responsible for planning and land use issues in a geographic area, a request from, say, a property developer where they want to know every thing or every document produced on a certain parcel of land, that can be a serious, serious request. You're talking about having to contract out for printing services so that they can get the GIS data on it. You're talking about information that's not digitized. It's contained either in a paper file or on microfilm or microfiche. If we all remember how that worked from our college days. So those are the sorts of concerns we have. And so it may cost more. There was one request that actually required the city of Tigard, they had to hire temps in order to help them fulfill it. It was so large. And then again, that was a land use related request where we're talking about lots of mapping data. So I think addressing the cost cap issue in this way, I think it could be potentially problematic for some of our members. But we look forward to continuing those discussions.
Chair Williamson, members of the committee, thank you for hearing testimony. I'm Becky Gladstone with the League of Women Voters, and you may have heard this before. The League of Women Voters is a 95-year-old grassroots, nonpartisan political organization that encourages informed and active participation in government. We support transparency in government processes and making public records accessible. I have filed pertinent League positions with our electronic testimony, and I would like to summarize these briefly for you. I'm sort of sitting on the other side of the fence from these gentlemen. We are the people who will be looking for some information. We have a couple of different kinds of websites we've been working on. One of them, laboriously, we go to individuals from the groups you're representing and say, can you tell us who's filed to run for office? And we're doing this for every category of office in Oregon, excepting PCPs. We're talking all the special districts. We were looking at almost 700 candidates and ballot measures, 300-400 in the last general election. We're representing primaries also. We're getting better at it. It's not easy. It's a lot of work. And we're looking at a new aspect of this, which is we think Oregonians deserve to know who represents them and be able to easily reach them. There is no place in the ORS that requires a central repository or an updated version of who sits in positions. In the ORS, it's required that the county clerks send notice in a timely fashion to all of the special districts, tell your people it's time to file if they want to run again. The county clerk's executive committee said, please, League of Women Voters, can you help us with this? Because nobody knows who the special districts are. People don't know how to vote for them. They don't know what's going on. Can you help us? We're working on it. Winners of elections are filed in due process. It's lovely. But that's often unrelated to who's actually sitting in place. And this is not centralized. It's important. This is something that we're working on. It does indirectly fit into this bill. This is the context I wanted to describe for a couple of comments I wanted to make specifically to this bill. The State Archivist, this is section 2.2A. The State Archivist shall provide periodic records from records officers about records management programs. And I'm thinking, idealistically, this almost could fit. And I know we're taking incremental steps. This is hinting towards we would like to see updated records for who is actually serving in office. It breaks my heart to look at records and see NCF, no candidate filed. Part of our records will show when terms of office end so people can anticipate and we can develop our talent pool. The next thing I'd like to speak to is section 2.3. Which has to do, it lists a few, state agencies, schools, school districts, soil and water conservation districts. I'm working with the state geospatial officer. I didn't realize when I looked at the ORS, I thought, oh, we must have a lot of special districts. We do have a lot of special districts. I had no idea we have like 100 varieties. And so I would recommend that we amend this to cover, not exactly, you may have an unintentional consequence of naming a few. Oh. You didn't mean the zoo. I think that, and I am going to work with the sponsors on this bill. In closing, I would like to say that section 4, bracket, parens, 5, et cetera, six, says that the custodian may furnish copies without charge. In gravity, I will not express how strongly I feel about this. We pay a lot of money, and we do bake sales and stuff to raise money to get 25 cents a page, and sometimes these pages are not scannable. One of the county clerks says, oh, I've got that for you, and I'll go, it's in a box in my basement. I'll go home and I can scan it, but then it's not electronic. We can't use it. We want to work with people. We can provide templates. This is one of those incremental steps towards the future. We urge support of this bill. Thank you.
Questions? Representative Rayfield.
So I would just, I just wanted to emphasize how important I think the public records portion is, and I don't want the cities or the counties to dismiss this. I think we heard a bill on public records in the long session, and I was actually not necessarily in favor of that bill because as someone who regularly does public records requests, I have seen the burden that I have placed on cities and counties over time, where it has taken a lot of administrative time to get back to me. But I've also been a part of, and I think you guys are going to, what you're going to feel is a little brunt of my frustration, is not to minimize that there is a problem right now with public records requests. And so thankfully my office is paperless, and I thought I'd give you guys a little timeline of the frustration that I have with one of our counties. I sent a public records request on November 3rd of 2015. Sent that out, and it was only three things on there. And it was actually, I was seeking a specific report that would have been filed pursuant to a policy, a procedure that they have in place. It's a required report. So I send this out. I have to follow up with these folks myself because there's a lack of communication because, you know, granted, they're fairly busy, right? But part of the problem I think that counties create is with that lack of communication, or cities as well. Long story short, we wind up getting to several follow-up things where I'm calling every 30 days trying to check in. 3 months later, gentlemen, 3 months later, I get one page back. And it was basically one sentence on the page two, I think it was, something along the lines of, we don't have those records. It took 3 months to do that. Which is also stalling what's going on for various folks that are involved in this situation for something that a policy said should be in place. And that is just an example of many other things that people are experiencing. I think, and so I when we look at this, I would really encourage you to work with everyone involved to find something that actually does work, and also probably encourage your cities and counties to be a little bit more proactive, because I think they are a part of the problem that creates the frustration for the folks that really want to get access to these records. And I do apologize. This is just something that I literally am recently frustrated with.
And I think it, to also comment towards that, there are times, and the reason that we wanted to address this issue is that there are times when people slow walk public records requests and are obstructionist in how they, whether it's with cost or whether it's with time. And but we also have a situation, especially in many of our rural counties, where they don't have their, I think, Ms. Gladstone, you spoke to this, where they don't have access to their information in a digital manner. So they're going and searching through boxes and boxes of records, and that does take more time. And one of the things that we had talked about, we didn't have a means to fund it, but was working with specifically our smaller and rural cities and counties in helping them digitize their information. That really is critical, and that will help alleviate a lot of the burden of what public records requests can be, and also allow for quicker responses.
May I respond? Chair Williamson, Representative Rayfield, I would point out to one of the things that's in the dash threes is based on the experience that you've articulated, and I know it was one of Rob's members, but This bill, the dash three, is actually put in a recourse, and we don't object to that. So you can, so under this bill, as I read it, you could, if you don't feel that you're getting the adequate response, you can go to the DA, district attorney, and say, I don't feel like I'm getting a reasonable response. And so this actually builds in an avenue for you to vent those frustrations in a constructive way. And Lee doesn't object to that being in the bill. The other thing that we've done, and I'm not sure the specifics of your request, but did it go to the contact that's listed on the website? Because one of the things we did in the 2007 legislature was add in a provision that requires that each public agency, public, state, or local, have a point of contact, and that person is responsible. And so vectoring those to go through, and again, establishing a negative fact actually takes a bit longer than that you don't have a document, requires you to turn over a lot more than simply finding it. So I think in the response, but again, this does give you a recourse that I don't know it was available before.
A quick follow-up. So the good news is like I said in the long session, I appreciate the length, because I have sent records requests where I've sent very lengthy. I've worked with departments about what it takes off, and my requests have to be reviewed by attorneys, so that adds on additional time. I'm very well versed as far as public records requests goes. This was actually a specific report pursuant to a policy, and it would have been very quick and easy to do. This is a place where they're already digitized in a county that is funded. It was so this was a unique situation. I have had plenty of requests that have gone beyond 90 days, and I'm perfectly okay with that given the breadth of the requests that I have and the amount of administrative time and folks that it would take. I've paid several thousand dollars for requests as far as going through this. So this was a unique situation, and this bill just happened to come up, and I was involved in kind of the drafting of this with some appreciation that there is truly on your end a significant burden with a lot of records requests, and there is a balancing that has to be done between those two. Yeah, so I do appreciate that.
Very much. Call up Kevin Campbell, Ted Hughes, and Greg Leo. And then I'll call up Joel Morton.
Let's go. Mm-hmm. You ready?
Yep.
Chair Williamson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kevin Campbell. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police and the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. I want to begin by thanking the sponsors of the bill. I'm up front here sharing this feedback, but I've had the chance to, I think there's really receptivity to try to, accommodate some of the concerns that are out there. And so I want to thank Representative Hoyle, Representative Davis, and this committee for your consideration. Let me get right to the point. From a law enforcement perspective, we're like other agencies that receive public records requests. We receive a lot of them, and the goal, and I think that law enforcement agencies do a good job, is to try to accommodate public requests, because the public needs documents from law enforcement agencies. They need them quickly, and they need to be able to take care of kind of the details that life puts in front of folks. However, there's one section four, and this is the one we've talked about already, line six on page four, which speaks to the fee cost recovery portion. Actual cost has been something that has worked. Restricting it to a $30 per hour cost is very difficult. I wanted to give a couple real examples of what kind of requests law enforcement agencies get. I do want to echo the fact that we have a wide range of capabilities in law enforcement agencies. We have one and two person departments and large departments. We have departments that are all paper. We have departments that still use fax machines. We have departments that have complicated RMS systems. So you're talking about kind of a wide range of capabilities. But I want to give you a couple. These three are from out of state, but many of the record requests that are large come from in-state as well. And often the request is large until they find out that it's expensive, and then they reduce it, right, to get what they really need. It's easy to ask for everything and then find out later. So first one comes from a Florida law firm that just asked for all documents, including emails, about communications regarding the FCC. It comes from out of state. These are very typical requests. They're very time-consuming to search and try to find out all those documents, but it's for litigation purposes somewhere in another part of the United States. It's not an unreasonable request, but it's a costly request. So that's one example. Another is a research team at Penn State and UC San Diego that requested 2 years of data on all felony arrests. And so it's a demanding request. And this agency, in this case, you won't believe it, so I'll just tell you who they were. It's Kaiser Police Department. They had to write a script for their RMS system in order to gather this data, and they were able to do it because, and guess how much it cost? $201. It's not excessive. But the hourly cost was $46 per hour for certain staff work. There are other agencies that would cost a lot more. My point is another agency would be killed by that request. And so this is the kind of request that comes in regularly. Let me give you another example from Crook County, because we talked a little bit about the impact on rural agencies. This is the kind of thing that just comes out of nowhere, but a law firm in New York requested, you know, a list of every DA and deputy DA to serve in Crook County since 1970. That is a paper exercise. It's a going to boxes and files and trying to find out where all that is. Now, the current process is that the agency would come up with a estimate of the cost. It's an actual estimate of the cost. And oftentimes, groups will say, all right, I don't want to do that. That's too expensive, or they'll amend the request. What's interesting is that for every agency that investigates a request, let's say they ask for the world, that agency goes through the process of creating the estimate, which takes time, staff time, every one of those do. Every time they walk away from the table and say, you know, we're not going to take advantage of that, thanks for doing that, it's time that's been spent. None of it is recoverable, right? We don't reimburse for that. My concern is for law enforcement agencies. They deal with some real complicated issues, including they have to have legal reviews of parts of what they may or may not release. They also have sometimes the requirement to redact. And so there are some requirements on law enforcement agencies that frankly are costly. We want to make sure that an agency can recover their actual costs, but we don't, you know, we obviously don't want them to try to recover more. But my point is that's a portion of the bill that we hope this committee will take a look at and see if you can address. And I greatly appreciate your time today. And I'd be glad to answer any questions if you have them, but thank you.
Chair Williamson, members of the House Rules Committee, my name is Greg Leo. I'm here today on behalf of the city of Wilsonville. This is a little bit like catching a moving train here. I have not yet read the dash threes, nor has our city attorney. So I think that as the situation evolves, some of the issues that we have in our written testimony are being addressed. I would like to associate myself with the comments just made by the police agencies about the cost. The cost recovery issue is really at the core of this. If it creates an unfunded mandate that cost shifts between citizens in order to cover these requests, then that is unfair to citizens, and it really makes it difficult for a small city like our city to administer. We have had some very extensive records requests which have tied up city staff for a very, very long time. Some of these have been fishing expeditions. One of them, Representative Kennemer, will be interested to know who represents this area. Please give us every document that between the city of Wilsonville and Charbonneau. Well, Charbonneau is a district in the city of Wilsonville. There are thousands of documents related to, you know, groundwater treatment, to roads, to, you know, every aspect of municipal government between this neighborhood and the rest of the city. So the point is where there needs to be, I think, a standard where the frivolous and the politically motivated and that which is designed to throw sand in the gears of government can somehow be excluded. Those which are true requests that are legitimate should be included. the cost should not be shifted to taxpayers, and there should, I think, as pointed out, should be some kind of a noticing of the time available or necessary in order to meet that request. I'm going to limit my comments because we have not read the dash threes, and it sounds like there's good progress being made here. But as introduced and the ones and twos, we would urge not support of this bill, but we think maybe it's getting better. So thank you.
Chair Williams and members of the committee, my name is Joel Morton, and I'm a lawyer at Metro. And I also represent the Oregon Zoo. I'm their legal representation. I'm here today, and my comments specifically today will be about that representation. First, let me say that we at Metro are intensely committed to transparency, and we support comprehensive public access to information by the public. I mean, it's foundational to what we do. However, we have some concerns with this bill, and I want to echo my colleague's comments on this. The 30-hour cap will be very difficult and unreasonable, the $1 an hour cap on cost recovery. I'd like to, if I may, put this issue in more practical terms in relation to the Oregon Zoo and what I do for them. We're in interesting times at the Oregon Zoo. In a recent year, we had 54 public records requests, more than one per week. Many of these, in fact, the majority of them were very broad, similar to what you've heard already. I can give you an example. One was all records pertaining to the zoo's elephant breeding program. Well, any of you who've lived in Oregon for a long time know that the elephant breeding program started before Packy was born in 1962. That would involve documents that are in storage at Iron Mountain and other places like that, as well as thousands upon 10,000s of emails. Last year alone, on a small public records request, I reviewed myself 11,000 emails, and that was a small one. This process requires search and assembly of tens of thousands of emails, in most cases for us anyway. And we feel like full cost recovery is a valuable incentive for requesters to narrow their requests. And it saves us time, and it saves them money. When they receive a large number, and I don't want to throw out numbers here today, but if they do receive a number that's in the six-figure range, we find that they pretty quickly begin to negotiate and discuss with us what documents they really need. And often that turns into a productive conversation that we either can give them records for free or records that cost them much less. We think that full cost recovery also recognizes an opportunity cost. I'm going to use that term loosely, but it's a lost opportunity because the kinds of these huge public records requests divert employees with critical functions to search for and assemble public records. It's not just the lawyers, it's the veterinarians. We have two veterinarians at the zoo, and if you ask them to search for 60 years of medical records and breeding records, I mean, they're integral to that search. They'll have to be part of it. And while they're doing that search, they're not treating sick animals. They're not researching cures for the diseases. They're not creating new treatment programs, corresponding with other people in the field. They're not doing their jobs, and we're not getting the benefit of that, and neither are the animals. Full cost recovery isn't perfect. I mean, that lost opportunity cost cannot be measured in money. I mean, you really can't once it's gone. But in this case, there's a safety valve for that anyway. In the bill, there's a fee waiver provision. Anyone can go to the district attorney, show how their request benefits the public, how this information will be beneficial to the public at large, and receive a fee waiver, either a partial fee waiver or a complete fee waiver. And in fact, many times we give documents for free because we already know what the DA will say if requests are to go to the DA. That concludes my comments.
Thank you, Chair Williamson. Mr. Morton, and for all of you, it is our intent to work with you to make sure that you can have actual cost charge actual cost. I mean, where we're really trying to get to is to ensure that public bodies are not using cost as an obstacle to for the public to get public records. But again, as I think you said it very well, Mr. Leo, that, you know, the public should not have to bear the cost of what a private individual should be responsible for.
Thank you. And we know this is an evolving process, and you have many voices in the conversation. And we appreciate the good work of the League and the Association of Oregon Counties and kind of carrying the ball here. So thank you.
And it is our intent to address this, and we will keep in contact with all of you as we get the next amendment moving forward.
Great.
Mr. Campbell, I mean, obviously law enforcement agencies are, I mean, really good at public records requests because you receive so many asking for police reports. I mean, I probably countless daily across the state. I was, you know, and a lot of those police reports cannot be released because there's investigations going on or something's still waiting in there. And so there's an interesting dynamic in the law enforcement realm as far as sending out letters and doing these things when often it's a transaction over the counter. And you're getting a receipt back as opposed to maybe the administrative time that might be necessary to send out a letter where, you know, someone at the counter is just saying, hey, this is the status of this. It's going to take this long. Are you guys looking at, okay, you know, in my head as I'm thinking about this and maybe ways we could better write this, that, you know, that transaction over the counter where there's face-to-face saying, hey, this is still pending, or, hey, I need to talk to the district attorney's office. I mean, have you guys thought about how to smooth that out, or does it need smoothing out? I don't know.
Chair Williamson, Representative Rayfield, I would need a little more time to consider what you're saying. I totally get that not all public records requests are created equal. So I think that the standard of cost recovery, actual cost, is one that our honest agencies have to deal with honestly. So I believe they do. I think if there's an issue where some agency is gouging the public on simple records requests, that's a problem. And if there's instances of that, that should be addressed for sure. My sense, just in, and I haven't spent a lot of time, I came into this conversation kind of as a secondary participant, and I wanted to be able to put some things on the record for the committee. But I would say that the goal of police agencies is to get records as inexpensively to people and as quickly as possible. That varies a little bit because of what I mentioned before, just capability in terms of mainly technology differences. But the reality is that's their goal. They want to make sure that the public gets it's part of public service, and it's part of the public having confidence in the public safety system. But so I think the cost standard applies across the board, whether it's a huge deal. We don't give the public a cost estimate for a simple task, and in many cases, and maybe most cases, we try to do that without cost. So
a follow-up? Yeah, and I'm putting the cost aside.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, this is more addressed, you know, procedurally when, generally speaking, a member of the public, not any one entity, but a member of the public walks into the sheriff's department or the police office, they literally fill out a form or it's something they've printed out offline. They walk in, they request a copy of a given police report. The person over on the other side of the counter says, here's the status of what's going on. Under the current law, that person would then be almost required to go back to their desk, type out a letter, and then send the letter out when they've already just exchanged this information verbally at the counter. And so what I was trying to do is, you know, from a law enforcement perspective and, you know, time and stuff like that, is there a way, I mean, you might, to write this better so we don't have an unintended consequence, to chat with those folks and see if, you know, that dynamic of what's actually going on, because in those situations the process is working very well.
Chair Williamson, Representative Rayfield. So I apologize, first of all, for answering the question you didn't ask. But I appreciate also your sentiment there, because I'm really not sure, but I'd like to take that question and take it back to the people that do it so that I can get a good feel for how that works, because that is a duplication of work. I'm sure there is some degree of needing to make sure there's a record, and I don't know if that requires a letter or not, but I think that's worth looking into. So thank you for the question. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dennis.
Hello, Kristen Dennis, Oregon State Treasury. I'll be very brief in my comments. As some of the funds that are managed in Treasury are held in trust, and as fiduciaries, we're obligated to recover actual costs as related to those trust funds. And I just looked at the Dash 3 amendments, and they are directly responsive to our concern. So thank you very much, Representative Hoyle, and to the other sponsors. So that's it from me.
The best testimony all day.
Our questions.
That was very businesslike, if I may say.
With that, I am going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4130.
No, Madam Chair, we'll be back here on Monday.
All right, with that, this meeting's adjourned. Have a good week. With that, this meeting's adjourned.